Yeah, it'll be like a more concentrated burst of podcast. Sort of like eating a bouillon cube instead of having soup. So you put the cube on your tongue and you drink some hot water. That kind of thing. Where you just have a burst of intense chickeny flavor.
Welcome to episode 178 of the PC Gamer Podcast for June 4th, 2009. Your host, Logan Decker, and this week we've got a very special podcast for you, chock full of tasty nuggets from the show floor at E3, the gamiest game show of the year, going down in Los Angeles even as we speak. Trolling the show for PC Gamer this week are Editor-in-Chief Gary Steinman and Previews Editor Evan Lotti, who are getting behind-closed-doors exclusive looks at all the awesome PC games being shown this year. In between appointments, Evan and Gary have been dropping tweets about the games they're seeing, which you can catch by following PC_Gamer on Twitter. Once again, that's PC_Gamer on Twitter. While Gary and Evan are at the show and Dan Stapleton is off getting married, joining me here at the PC Gamer compound is Alpha intern Josh Augustine.
How appropriate. You fight like a cow.
Beta intern Max McGee.
Hello, children.
In his debut on the PC Gamer Podcast. And as always, PC Gamer Podcast producer Andy Bauman.
Will you fight like a dairy farmer?
Ow.
Well, there's certainly a lot of excitement about the return of Monkey Island.
Oh, my
gosh. Is there not?
It's like the only reason I need to stay alive until July 7th. Like, you know, and you're like, well, you know, I could die. Now I can't die. I must not.
And how awesomely cool is that? That they announced something and it's not like, yes, and this, you'll be playing it by 2013, you know?
Oh, yeah. Like, I already pre-ordered it as soon as the announcement went.
And like Josh, you were tweeting about this earlier, I think, where you just said, wait a minute, I don't have time to play all the old games, you know, all over again.
As soon as I heard about it, I was like, okay, I can jump back on one, go through two, three, four, and then I was like, oh, a month? Man. So I'm trying to decide still which one I want to do. I'm leaning towards four, just because, you know, they're remaking one, they'll probably remake two. Three is the best, but I know it too well, I still remember all the puzzles, so I'm thinking I'll play through four again.
That's wise. Yeah, I don't even know if I don't know how many I'm going to be able to get through before they come out with the new one. Did anyone look at any of the videos?
Oh, yes.
That?
Oh, like many times studying.
Yeah.
Frame by frame.
Pretty much, yeah. Like, the remake one for Xbox Live, are they putting that out on PC?
Yeah, they are. Okay, it's digital download.
Oh, great. Because
a phrase that I can use since Dan is not on the podcast.
Oh, he's going to purr.
Because the fact that they're getting Dominic Armano back to do the voice acting in the first game, which didn't have any because it was, you know, old, made in the olden days when there was no voice acting, will be phenomenal, and it'll make it more like Monkey Island 3, which is by far the best one, and that's the first one they started having voices in and stuff. So,
oh yeah,
and then the fact that Telltale is doing episodic series, carrying the torch further, is like mind blowing.
I know, how can they have both of these at once?
Yeah,
it's
like
too good.
They can't do this to everybody.
I mean, with the whole episodic thing, I would be like, I don't know how this is going to work out if it were anyone else, you know?
For sure, but
they just nailed it, you know, how to do this. In my fantasy world, in my head, which, you know, you're all invited anytime, I just imagined that they went to Dominic's house, you know, and by now he's like, you know, he's taken to drink and he had beard stubble and all that. And they're like, please come back. Let's have another adventure. And he threw the whiskey bottle at the door, you know, and it hit the trailer door. Get off my property.
Yeah.
And they said, please, please, you're needed again. You know, and Telltale made an impassioned speech. Answer the call. And then he came out like in a soiled tank top and he's like, what? You know?
It's perfect. You guys were like dropping hints last week and I was like, yeah, that would be cool, but never going to happen. And then it just totally blew me away.
And they're still gluing the top of your head.
Yeah, like there's no, scalp. Like I'm actually really nervous that like, some freak accident's going to happen. I'm not going to be able to see the new Monkey Island. It's like the only thing that matters now in life is...
Don't worry, if you're in a coma, I'll bring a laptop by your side and play it and guide you step by step.
See?
Every bit along the way.
That's one of the most poignant moments in the podcast
the fans
ever.
Know. Fellow Monkey Island fans know how important this is.
It is.
We really didn't know that long ago. I mean, I think they baked this one in secrecy for a while.
Well, I mean, the must-have is already coming out July 7th.
It's crazy.
Yeah, somebody was doing it on the side and it had it in a little, you know, the disc in a little lunchbox. And they stumbled upon it. Ooh, look at this. Let's do it, you know?
Really, the thing I'm kind of most excited about is, you know, it's awesome they're redoing the graphic, adding voiceovers. But the fact that you can kind of switch back between the old two, because, you know, there's going to be people that just don't want voiceovers.
Yeah.
You know, you've imagined all these voices in your head. And the fact you can switch over, like, on the fly anytime you want is great.
Yeah.
Not to mention, like, I lost my CDs for Monkey Island 2 a while ago, and I'm just happy to have it kind of easily accessible again.
Yeah, I agree with you about the voices thing. You know, you develop those voices in your head after a while, and they become so distinctive. And then when you hear a voice, you know, try to replace that, it sounds weird and discordant, which is why I'm a little about the announcement about The Old Republic being the first fully voiced MMO. You know, I mean... Voices, I don't know, what do you guys think? I don't think voices are the most important thing for me. I always hear them in my head anyway, and does that excite you guys at all?
I'm very excited about that, I have to
say. Okay, all right.
But see, that's usually the big difference for me between like single-player RPGs and MMOs. MMOs voice act nothing, just because there's so much out there.
Yeah.
And to me, it really does, especially with Star Wars. I mean, Star Wars characters already have voices. And so if they introduce, you know, Han Solo, they better have Harrison Ford there, you know, saying the lines.
Yeah, right.
But if it's new characters you haven't seen before, it's not like going back to an old game like Monkey Island that you've already played where you've developed these.
Yeah, that's true.
They're given right away. And I mean, I'm really excited because it really does add a lot. You know, I may not want to sit there and read through the text quest, but if I can just accept it and move on and have the guy read it out loud to me while I'm kind of going about doing it, I mean, that would be perfect.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'll buy that. So we've all been monitoring the E3 coverage so far. If you could take one news item to bed tonight and hug it under the comforter all night and keep it warm, what would it be?
Dominique Armato.
Okay, after that.
Are you more excited for the new series or the remake?
Ooh,
he nailed you.
That's tough.
Because I'm more excited about the new series.
Yeah, as am I.
Yeah, I guess so. As long as they can nail the humor. That's the one thing I'm kind of hesitant about. I saw a quote where someone actually said, you know, a lot of new characters are being introduced. Not all the old characters are coming out. And quote, like, your favorite character won't be there. Like, they said that. I'm not sure who they're referring to. Like, I'm not sure if there is kind of a standard favorite character.
Mm-hmm.
But if he's just kind of saying a lot of the favorite old characters won't be in the new series, that does bum me a bit. I just want Murray the Talking Skull there to show
up. Yes, definitely.
With all his diabolical evilness. Okay.
Well, now maybe they'll have like Alice the Talking Femur. It could happen. Okay, but after Monkey Island, what's your number one story? What got you most excited from the show?
Oh, that Assassin's Creed video is pretty impressive. Having Leonardo da Vinci there, making new inventions, all the cool drawings we've seen brought to life. I'm very excited about that.
Max, how about you?
You've got Mass Effect 2, which will be fun, but Assassin's Creed 2, which will be fun. But I really got excited for Alan Wake, which I actually just watched the demo of it right before we came on here, because I really like the sort of the Silent Hill-esque vibe it's got going on.
Yeah.
Because it was completely off my radar until like just a few minutes ago. Because all you ever hear about is like, oh, Alan Wake got delayed again. Da-da-da-da.
Yeah, we were very concerned for a while because we weren't hearing anything about it. And we're like, oh, no. But I think they were just sort of pulling back a little bit before the show. And I'm really, really glad to have seen that one bobbed up again. 2010, okay, I can live with that. It's coming close faster than we think. How about you, Andy?
First, my most enthusiastic reaction, which had me running up and down the hallways at work, was the Monkey Island stuff, for sure.
Okay.
But then probably, like, hidden in there, which I watched the video for and got, like, really into, was the Splinter Cell 5, the Splinter Cell Conviction gameplay stuff.
Uh-huh.
that they showed where he infiltrates that mansion and just starts like beating up that guy. Man.
Yeah, Evan seemed really thrilled by that.
Yeah, like I actually didn't play Splinter Cell 4, but I played all the first three and was way into it. And this is just looks like get back into the action of just like what Splinter Cell is all about. Even more, like even heighten it. So
I gotta say that the thing that got me was it was the Assassin's Creed video. Because I liked Assassin's Creed, but my response was typical of most people, which was, you know, this is fun, it's beautiful, it's really cool. And halfway through the game, I'm like, more? It's like, it just was...
Another guy getting harassed by the guards?
Yeah, you know, I was just like, I just couldn't do it. And when I saw that video, I'm like, so they got a running start, right? No pun intended, but you know. And that's where it was going, you know, and it just looks like, you know, it just makes Assassin's Creed 1 look like a prelude. And I'm like, that's the game I was waiting for.
Were those wings like, was he actually controlling or was that kind of a scripted event? Do we know?
I think he was controlling them. That was my guess. Although how he was catching like altitude again, I'm not certain.
Yeah, because that looked really cool.
He may have been signaling with the mirror blowers on the ground, you know, with little bellows, helping people, and they go, and then they blow you back up there, you know, if you have that kind of help, which you could get back then for pennies. That's my thought.
Are you guys excited about the setting, the Renaissance Italy setting?
I wasn't sure until I saw the video, and now I'm sure. Absolutely.
Because after playing through Assassin's Creed 1, I thought it might have been maybe a little more interesting if they had jumped maybe sort of out of the Dark Ages kind of time period, maybe into sort of like a World War II setting, or not World War II, but like World War I, and maybe you were playing like an assassin on the battlefield or something like that.
You know what? It gives me a... Okay, I'm not going to use that word again because people always freak out when I use it. What makes me excited is that it looks to me like... the steampunk is getting is becoming kind of a cliche, you know, you get the same, you know, sort of look and feel, that everyone's going for. And this to me is like it's a fresher take on the whole sort of magical mechanical thing, you know? It's the same sort of vibe that Thief 3 had, right? The entire Thief series, except that was just way too slow and static for me. In general, although I loved Thief 3, and I liked the machines, I liked the look, I liked the you know, mechanical feel, you know, with just a hint of sort of magic to it. That looks fantastic, but doesn't rely on the same steampunk sort of, you know, cliches we're seeing a lot these days.
Yeah, I agree. It's close enough, kind of to medieval, but just enough of a twist to make it interesting. And I don't think there's been a lot of stuff set in that zone, in that time frame or that area. So it is really nice. I was kind of like the giant, at one point you see like a giant jester head plastered on the wall. That looked kind of weird to me. It's kind of goofy. So I hope they don't, go over the top with kind of, oh, there's jesters and stuff all over the place. But I mean, it looks interesting enough. The people dancing, always funny to see them kind of clomping around.
But you know, I mean, if people dig it, and from the response to the video, I'm sure they will. You know, I'm sure they'll keep climbing through the era, you know, the eras.
Well, one thing I'm definitely going to do before Assassin's Creed 2 is I need to look back at all of Leonardo da Vinci's inventions, because I think he like had drawings for a helicopter and stuff too, because if he has all that sort of stuff, I just want to get kind of like a preview of, oh, I hope this is in the game. Oh, I hope they do this weird jetpack he drew or something. I'd be curious just to kind of, just because I like inventions too, I'd be interested to see all what he drew up.
Actually, you can go, I believe that you can go, when I was, I can't remember if it's in Florence or Venice, the Leonardo da Vinci Museum, but they have a website which also has animations of a lot of his inventions. That's really cool. The museum actually, I think, also has in a glass box his desiccated penis, which I thought was a little weird. But,
are you kidding me?
No, I'm not.
That's really kind of disturbing. I hope that doesn't make it into the game.
That's wild. Yeah.
His final gift to him.
You can't make some of this stuff up. It's a great museum though if you ever are in the area. Yeah, I can't remember if it's in... It is in Florence, yes. Well, the announcement of Left 4 Dead 2 is certainly making a splash, which also happens to be our cover story for August 09. And it turns out people are actually kind of upset about this, which is comes as a big surprise to me.
Yeah, I don't get this at all. I mean, they're upset because it's going to split the community, or, you know, they wanted free stuff for longer instead of a brand new game. I'm not really sure.
Anyone here sharing the sort of Valve rage?
No, I will say I was, when I knew that there was something going on at Valve, that they were going to announce something, but I didn't know what it was. And then when it turned out to be Left 4 Dead 2, I was just like, huh?
Yeah.
Like, but then that trailer, I mean, impressive trailer that they released. I can't say that I'm not excited to play the new setting and the new characters, because it looks awesome. But, I mean, I guess I was more like thinking it would be a Portal game or Episode 3 or anything but Left 4 Dead 2.
Yeah.
But I mean, they're always full of surprises, so...
Oh, yeah. When we got the announcement, we were like, you know, when they contacted us, we were like, what? Wow.
It's kind of a bold move.
Yeah.
In a way.
But I really don't understand that, you know, that, I mean, I know it's just my perspective, maybe. I know I'm going to sound like a Valve apologist, but, you know, if you put down money for a game, you're buying that game, and I just really would not recommend anybody buying on the promise that, you know, you might get some extra stuff or something like that. You know, I feel like Left 4 Dead is totally worth it, you know, the $50 price.
They've already released a bunch of free content. It's not like they've totally abandoned it. It's just we're used to Valve, you know, giving free content for 2 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Looking at the Team Fortress 2 updates, I mean, how many years has it taken them to put out just that much content? Instead, they're giving us all that content that they would normally give over, you know, 3 years, and they're offering it right now. You have to pay a little bit, but I mean, I'd rather have all that content now than wait 3 years down the line when the graphics are dated and all this stuff.
Dan Stapleton actually posted on the PC Gamer podcast forum sort of a comparison of the time, how long it took them to release updates for Team Fortress 2 and versus Left 4 Dead. This interval, and found it to be pretty comparable. So, you know, I mean, sure, you know, PC games are expensive and, you know, you want to believe you're getting the most for your money, but I still don't understand being upset about this. I think it's terrific news and I can't wait to play it. And The Plantation, terrifying. Crysis 2 multi-platform.
Oh, yeah, there was that announcement too.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is awesome because...
Well, yeah. But, I mean, multi-platform, what does that mean? I don't know what that means.
Multi-platform means that human beings in their PCs will actually be able to run the game. You know what I mean? Crysis was really a system buster, and I think that was really annoying for a lot of people not to be able to run it like they saw in the previews, in the screenshots, you know? You know, to be able to run the game that looked like it looked in their imaginations, you know, as they saw all the previews, was pretty disappointing, I think, for a lot of people. And, you know, and it was a game that could only be played on the PC, but, you know, even then, it would only look like it could at its best on a tiny, tiny fraction of those PCs, and that was pretty upsetting.
I mean,
so I'm all about this new engine, you know. And, you know, remember, these are still PC folks, you know.
Yeah.
So I don't worry too much about how gameplay is going to develop. You know, sure, it could take a turn for a worst. It will probably not, you know, because like I said, these are PC folks. And they're hardcore PC folks, you know. They brought us Far Cry. They brought us Crysis, you know. I think they're going to bring us something just as thrilling next time.
See, now I hate to be a little buzzkill here.
Okay.
I mean, if the new game isn't pushing technology to its absolute limit, I mean, is it really a crisis? I mean, that's really what the whole franchise was founded on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. I never played through the full Crysis. I played a couple hours into it. I got kind of bored. The story didn't seem very interesting.
Uh-huh.
So I'm not really interested in the new Crysis because the technology was really the only side of it that I felt was kind of made it unique or worth my time.
Mm-hmm. Did you play far enough to get to the Talking Skull?
No. There's a Talking Skull.
Oh, jeez. Well, it looks like you blew it, man.
You missed out, dude.
Yeah, that's all right. I mean, whatever.
So is it really, is the story actually that good? Is it interesting?
It's not about the story. Crisis is more about the way the game world moves and the way you move within the game world and the way you play the game. Like, it's so pure in that sense. That's what made it great in my eyes. I really don't know if developing multi-platform will change that, so it's still something to look forward to, I guess.
I liked the story. I thought it was understandable. The characters were clear, and there's a shift mid-game that's pretty exciting.
Sure. Yeah.
And it's just pure aggression the whole game, you know, because you're fighting something that's just really doesn't do a lot of talking and negotiating, doesn't get emotional like you do, you know, and it's just angry. And it's going to crush you if you don't crush it first. So I love that kind of thing.
All right.
Always gets me going. I'm really looking forward to what they're going to be doing. And, you know, I think it probably will end up pushing the PC considerably because, you know, they're going to probably tailor every version for that platform. And they know they've got lots of headroom, you know, on the PC. And they can do things. And I can almost guarantee you they will, you know, make a version for the PC that's, you're just not going to be able to see anything like it on any other platform. It's almost guaranteed. These are PC guys and they love doing that.
Yeah, this is the one case where I hope that the PC version is delayed a bit and they take the time to kind of fine tune it to the platform. Because, I mean, especially, when is this coming out? Next year?
Yes, next year, I believe.
Yeah, especially by next year, the difference between PCs and kind of the older consoles, I mean, it's going to be a very big difference.
Oh, what is this? Mafia 2, great characters in firefights. Evan and Gary are still twittering. Not convinced by the driving bits or city design. I am convinced. I saw Mafia 2 not too long ago, and I was utterly convinced by the driving bits and the city design. I was a little frustrated in the original Mafia, you know, because the cars were very slow. Because they're 40s cars, and the, you know, the 30s and 40s, and this is set in the 50s, and everything, the city just looks absolutely fantastic. And one of my favorite things was watching glass brick splintering as you shoot through it.
I love, you know, Mafia 1. Tell. I
mean, yeah, wasn't it? Oh, it was so fantastic.
Maybe my tastes have changed because it was kind of a long time ago, but I remember digging the fact that you had to stop at the stoplights and like be a good driver. Like for some reason, the rigidness was like appealing in that case.
Yeah,
I don't know why, but I liked it a lot. And the cars,
it wasn't just the all out, you know.
Yeah, it was like stepping into shoot that time, and like,
yeah, exactly. And man, did they just make it look terrific. And I, one thing I love about about what they're doing with Mafia 2 is they're not worried about what everyone else is doing. They're not worried about the open world thing. They said, well, this is not a, you know, you can do things, you can go get missions from people, you can do all that stuff, but what we're really making, what we're focusing on is a story. And that's terrific. They, you know, in a sense, they're by doing what they did before, they're bucking the trend, which is, you know, to pretend like it's this big open world, you can do whatever you want, when really, you know, you can't do whatever you want in any of them. And a lot of times what gets lost in those open world games is a really good story. You know, that you're led through and that you get to be involved with.
So speaking of wild open worlds, Just Cause 2 videos have been shaking up things, you know, online.
Yeah.
Is that's going to be, I think that's going to be out on PC because the first one.
Yes.
Worked.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I mean, some of the stuff that looks like you're able to do in that just looks ridiculously fun.
Oh, yeah. I remember, you know, you dropping a hook onto a car with a hang glider and having it pull me and I'd like, take, you know, catch 200 feet right there.
That game just looks like it's going to be fun to just go and like try and make yourself look cool doing things. Like I don't even know if it's going to be fun to play the storyline or not, but the mere fact that you can latch onto a car while it's moving, pull yourself to it, anchor that car to the ground and have it flip over.
It was a terrific game. I thought it was a little underrated, although I will totally admit that once, you know, a firefight broke out and shots are fired and chaos sets in, all I heard was the Benny Hill theme, you know, and all these little people running around, you know, it was just kind of silly. But I still thought it was a really fun game. Speaking of closed worlds, The Matrix Online is going offline, which is probably the first time Sony has ever shut down one of its MMOs, I believe. I can't think of a precedent for that with them.
Yeah, they've even had a quote saying, you know, we have never and we will never take one of our MMOs offline. You know, I've kind of seen that being thrown around after this news came out. It's kind of a bummer. I mean, especially because there's like, if I'm playing Pirates of the Burning Sea or Planetside, you know, I might start to get a little worried that they're going to take my game off too.
Yeah.
Did Vanguard, is Vanguard still up?
Yeah, Vanguard's still up. This is the only one they've announced so far.
I got to admit, I kind of forgotten it was
yeah
open at all. I mean, I remember playing it when it first started, and you know, there were a lot of people in fancy outfits standing around, and wasn't all that compelling. But was there anyone who really got into it?
No, I mean, I heard about how they kind of hired actors to play like the main characters and walk around the servers interacting with players.
Yeah, they really put a lot into it, you know. Yeah. They had the woman who played the Oracle, the second one. She was in there and, you know, she recorded a lot of stuff. Seraph was in it as well. You know, they really did. It's not like, you know, it wasn't just something they casually threw up. You know, they invested a lot into the game. I just think, you know, unfortunately for them, the last two movies weren't all that.
And, yeah, I think that really hurt them because, I mean, The Matrix kind of became uncool, you know, towards the end.
Yeah.
Whereas, I mean, if it had just been the first movie or if the second and third had been just as powerful, I mean, I could see that. But, you know, who wants to really admit that you're playing The Matrix online after when the movie out there is just getting slammed by everybody?
And the fighting never, you know, the kung fu fighting never really worked out all that well. But, you know, it's too bad. I actually thought that The Matrix game, the original one, was pretty good. But I'm definitely in a minority there.
Yes, you are.
But I didn't play The Path of Neo. Did you? Did anybody else here?
Can't say I did.
Only very briefly.
Was that any? Did it? You know, was that any good at all?
I really didn't get too far out. There's like a lot of training you do as Neo in the construct before you get to go out and do any of the story missions, and I did not make it through all of that. I remember being in like a bamboo jungle with a samurai sword and fighting ninjas, and thinking this is awesome, but it's also just kind of a generic third-person hack and slash.
Yeah.
That doesn't really sound very Matrix-y right there.
But I went back and watched like through the whole Matrix trilogy not too long ago, and when it was over, I was kind of thinking, man, you know, I want to know what happens next now that the war is over.
Yeah.
And then I remembered, oh yeah, Matrix Online. So now that it's like getting shut down and it's over, I'd like to see just like a summary of all the story that's happened in the Matrix Online and just sort of nerd out on that. Because apparently it just takes off right after the third movie ends.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they had a lot of people involved with the movie actually helping with the story up until a certain point. So, I mean, a lot of the stuff would be quote-unquote canon. You know, that's a really good idea. I'd be interested in reading that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That'd be really cool if they had the kind of like, if prominent players kind of got worked into the lore too. So you have like, oh, this guy became, you know, Neo's best friend or something like that. Mm-hmm. That'd be kind of cool just to see your character mentioned in there.
And then you get a t-shirt that says Neo's best friend. So thank you, you know.
Yeah, they are giving the people that are still subscribing, I think, 2 months in any of their, well, almost any of their other MMOs, kind of the older ones, except Vanguard, I think, was the weird one that wasn't included on the list that they could play for free.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, a little going away present.
Yeah, but. Because that's a decent gesture. I mean, I wouldn't be too sore at Sony. It's like, at some point, you know, if something's not successful, it just doesn't make any sense, you know? It costs a lot of money to keep the servers up.
Yeah, if anything, I might be thanking them that they kept them up this long.
Yeah.
So I hope that other MMOs, this isn't a sign for other MMOs that SOE is taking over, because, I mean, no one likes to see the characters they've spent so much time in disappear, and SOE's been really good about kind of keeping them up, even with really small numbers.
Yeah. Maybe you can have your character cryogenically frozen for an extra fee, in case the game ever comes back. That would be very optimistic, I think, you know?
Yeah, that would be.
Let's take some questions from the PC Gamer podcast audience.
Hey guys, this is Patrick from Iowa. I have a comment regarding your discussion about games as art.
Uh-oh,
I don't think anyone would argue that a large number of games have violent content in them, or the gameplay is based around violence or combat. Since games primarily revolve around eliciting some sort of emotional response from the user, it appears the emotion of fear is the easiest to produce. For example, if you're playing a high-action FPS shooter, the fight-or-flight response can really kick into high gear. It all seems to boil down to a sense of presence in a game. If I don't feel that I'm actually the character in the game, the emotional response is diminished. So what other emotions do you think games could bring out in the future? Sadness? Shame? What about love? Anyway, keep up the great work.
Gosh, I mean, all of them, right? I mean, already I can think of... I've had sadness elicited.
I felt ashamed after I blew up Megaton. I had to go back and undo it. I felt really bad.
You shouldn't be able to just go back. See, now, this is a good example of, like, the choice sort of stuff that you can do in an RPG that is really powerful and I really like. The fact that you reloaded, like, shouldn't have happened, you know?
That's true. I can't be the bad guy.
I know. I have a hard time playing as the evil character, too. And, like, sometimes, I guess I allow myself to go back and do something if, like, it wasn't my fault that something happened. Like, wait, what? Like, what just happened? And then I'm like, oh, okay, so I'll reload that. But, like, you chose to blow up Megaton, so you should, like, live with that. You know what I mean?
Oh, yes. But I should have. I just wanted the pretty explosion.
Yeah, you just wanted to, like, see what happened.
Yeah.
You know, it was so far away that I can barely remember it, and which makes me feel ashamed right there. But I can't remember if it was Ultima 3 or 4 that I played, you know, decades ago or whatever. And I remember I got yelled at the end of the game for the things I'd done throughout the game. And I felt terribly ashamed because who was it? It was some deity basically, you know, read me for, you know, having been too brutal and too harsh. And I just sat there with a quivering lip going, me, 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 like Beaker, you know? And that made me feel totally ashamed. I'm like, yeah, I did that. I just wanted to get through the game faster. I'm sorry. I needed more money. I was hungry. And that was way back when. I mean, I'm not sure that there's any emotion that hasn't been elicited by a game already.
I'd have to say the most common is definitely frustration rather than fear.
Yeah, I can relate to that, sure, because I'm playing through Braid right now.
That's a good example
of a game that's just purely, you know, platforming gameplay with, like, puzzle solving mixed in. And basically all you are is either satisfied or frustrated. Or not satisfied, but you're, like, proud of yourself for figuring it out. Or frustrated that you don't know what to do.
We talked about a game called Pathologic in the issue we're working on right now.
Oh, dude, I was talking about that game.
Oh, yes, you're the one who turned me on to it. And that is a game that is devastating.
I couldn't play it, though, because of the refresh rate. Like, hurt my eyes. Did you have that problem?
I had lots of problems getting things to go, you know. Okay. It wasn't a very smooth experience. And it's not a real entertaining game experience.
Oh, no, no.
Not at all.
I got to the point where the game was starting to pick up.
But it does elicit an emotion that even few movies ever get to, which is a sense of resignation and not about the game itself, but about what's happening in the game. Like, there's not much you can do about what's going on, about the death and the destruction and the decay and the despair. You know, there's just the game lets you think for a second that maybe there's something you can do, but eventually you kind of get the idea that no. At best, you're just sort of delaying the worst. And that's a very specific kind of emotion that's real icky. I'm not sure that there's a word for it. Maybe ironic regret I heard a long time ago, but I don't really like that. It sounds really funky, but that's one.
So
anyway,
did you play through the game, like, really far, Pathologic?
Not really far. I just was like, oh my god, this is so... It's like a chore.
It is. It sounded like such an interesting exercise in, like, what gaming can be that you have never seen before. Yeah. That I really wanted to play it. I was just sad that I couldn't do it. Like, it just gave me headaches. Not even headaches. It just bothered my eyes, like, so bad.
Excellent comment, though. Thank you for calling in. Let's take another.
Hello, PC Gamer Podcast. This is Mitch in Ohio. You guys were talking last time about how some games try to be like movies, and that reminded me of No One Lives Forever, a game not only very cinematic and obviously a parody of spy movies, but it even said filmed in Lithscope during the credit sequence. And that led me to wonder, if a game is already very, very similar to a movie, does it necessarily need a movie adaptation? And if that game were made into a movie, how could it not feel like a video game? And I think these questions need to be answered before any game-to-movie adaptation is even considered. Thanks. Great job. Awesome podcast. Bye.
Yeah, well, if that amount of thinking went down before every movie adaptation, I think we wouldn't see any. They did an entire meltdown of the entertainment industrial complex.
It's been interesting to see what games make it out. I mean, they're all Uwe Boll movies, practically, but...
Yeah.
Dungeon Siege? What?
God.
Like, you couldn't pick a better franchise for a movie adaptation?
But, I mean, I could totally see either of the No One Lives Forever games being movies, with the right actress.
Because they have such strong characters. I mean,
yeah, and they're
that's
hilarious,
the
Yeah. But at the same time, why bother having it a movie when you can actually chase a guy on a tricycle with a little pea shooter,
Right.
Yeah.
It was a better game. I had more fun with the game than I would with the movie.
Yeah, the only way I kind of see movies from games working is if you just kind of take the universe, and if the universe itself is really interesting, if it's a deep, well-fleshed-out universe, and take it and create a separate movie in that same universe, that's the only way you can kind of get away from, having to do a first-person shooter perspective for like 3 minutes like Doom as a tribute to gamers.
Oh, man.
You just need to totally avoid the whole video game part. Just take the universe it created and put a separate movie in there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, why not just, let movies be movies and games be games? Because I would rather ride the tricycle than watch someone else ride a tricycle shooting a beach shooter.
Yeah, absolutely. Although it would be kind of fun to see Kate Beckinsale as Kate Archer.
That is true.
Am I right? Like, is she not Kate Archer or what?
I would not argue
there.
You
got a point.
All right, then.
Let's start casting this.
You get it going. We should contact your agent. Hi, I'm Logan. I'm making a movie.
I don't know. I still think there's tons of potential for that.
Sure, absolutely.
Like game adaptations to movies. I just think that no one's taken it seriously enough. Or at least no one's like been in love with the source material as much as they should be when they take on an adaptation.
Yeah. I mean, I suspect that a lot of people do get it, but to get a movie made, there's so many tens of millions of dollars involved that all these people have to check off on it, and they all need to leave their signature and their stamp, and they all have different and conflicting ideas, no doubt, right? And the product you get at the end is like, what?
Yeah.
It's just, the nature of the system. Totally. Whereas, any director big and independent enough to secure his own vision and see it through is probably not that interested in making a video game adaptation, but that's only true now. That won't be true maybe in 10 years.
I mean, it
years.
Almost happened with Peter Jackson and Halo.
Exactly. So that's why it will happen in the future and very soon. But video games are so new, comparatively, that it's only this generation that really gets, what they do and how they tell stories. And like you said, Peter Jackson was the first guy, I think, who really had a shot at doing that right.
Yeah.
But somebody else will. Somebody else will come and do it. And maybe it'll be him again, We'll see.
Yeah, I'd really like to see kind of like a Warhammer type movie based on that universe or World of Warcraft. Because, I mean, the elves and orcs is so kind of cliche in video games. But, it really hasn't been done in movies a whole lot. And like Lord of the Rings proved you can... created like a really good story. Well, obviously that story was already created, but you can create a really good movie in that sort of setting. I would love to see more kind of elves and orcs movies,
or maybe an elves and orcs channel.
I could get into that.
Wouldn't that be great? And you could have like Orc Shopping Network, and and they're like, look
big
at this axe.
Yeah.
And then they actually chop somebody's head off right there, on the camera.
Yes.
look at that look, I can do six more. Whack and then orc sitcoms with the laugh tracks. How do orcs laugh? Like, ho, ho, ho.
Something like that. That's anyway, pretty close.
That's just kind of what I was thinking, but that's me. Anyway, hey.
Okay, well, hold on. Putting on the brakes a little
hold
bit.
On.
Hold on.
Don't even.
Here is my... can't believe I didn't even think of this when I was thinking about the question. But a game that had... that took my attention as perfect for adaptation to the movies was Max Payne. Because, yes, while it was awesomely fun to be Max Payne, and, you know, obviously that's going to be way better, but there was so much, like, visual awesomeness that can be done as a gunfight movie. I mean, I guess this is just a fan, like a big John Woo fan talking, but you could have made that such a cool movie about Max Payne, because, I mean, you had a, you know, you had a story, mm-hmm. and you had awesome gunfighting that you could have capitalized on, and, like, just limitless potential for awesome, and they squandered that. And
you know, actually, that's one instance in which I would have recommended against Josh's advice, which was good advice, but in this case, I would have said, you know what, just make a straight adaptation of that game.
Exactly. That's what I would have done.
One.
That's
word for word, you know?
Why not?
The scene.
Yeah, because like,
it
yeah, would've it
would have been awesome.
It would have been, it's obviously going to be a different experience than not playing the game, but it's still going to be freaking awesome to see that stuff play out in a live-action cinematic experience. Like, way better than what they ended up with, which was what, I don't even know how they got to where they got.
Like, yeah, it was one of the very, I just don't do it that often, you know, because they're so expensive, but it was one of the very few movies that I walked out, I'm like, I can't deal.
Couldn't even
Yeah, it was.
See
it
through,
wasn't even that
know?
Long. It was like half an hour or 40 minutes, and I was just like, enough, I've been tortured enough, you know? I'm going to go get waterboarded instead. I just couldn't deal. Anyway, if you want to hear us go off on a rant, all you have to do is send us your questions in MP3 format to pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. That's pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com, or just call us toll free at 877-404-1337 at extension 724 and record your question there. And do as I say and not as I do by keeping it short and clean. You can also subscribe to our awesome magazine by heading over to pcgamer.com and subscribing. We're also looking for gamers who crave instant fame by having their awesome screenshots and photos of their rigs and gaming setups printed in the magazine. Send them to letters@pcgamer.com, and you just might see your handiwork in the PC Gamer letters section read the entire world over. Now, I bet you think that I forgot playlists, but I did not. Max McGee, what are you playing this week?
Oh, man, I wish I'd been playing more than I have. I just, here at the office, I've been playing a lot of The Hunter.
Oh, yeah.
Which, yeah, it's a free-to-play hunting simulation game. And
sorry. Oh, I really think that might, like, offend somebody. I'm sorry, like, not. I didn't
That's
mean,
okay. That's... No, you should hear him out. He's actually been pretty... I see him over there tensed up, watching the little radar, looking for deer sneaking up on him, moving. It's like, I'm pretty sure if I went behind him and kind of poked him, he would freak out. He is.
I know, you
game.
Do freak out. You've got, like, this GPS, and you track, like, animal tracks, animal droppings, and you... Sometimes the deer or the elk or whatever you're tracking will call out, and the GPS will pinpoint its exact location, and sometimes it's, like, right on top of you, and you freak out. You're, like, in the movie Aliens, and... They're right on top of us. Where is it? Where is they?
Game over, man.
But no. So yeah, it's free to play, and you start out with, like, you can only hunt one type of animal, and you only get one gun, and then you have to, if you want to hunt other types, you of course have to pay for it or pay for better weapons. But it's a very good looking game. That was the first thing that surprised me, is how nice it looks. It runs on the same engine that Just Cause uses, and
it does look nice. Yeah,
it's a very casual game, so it has to make a lot of omissions to, like, what you would be doing as an actual hunter, or if this were an actual hunting simulator. Like, the game has animal tracks in it, sure, but the animal tracks are, like, there's a big red marker on them, and basically all you do is scan them with your little GPS tracker thing, and
it's like Metroid hunting game.
Yeah, it'll tell you, like, in what direction the deer is headed or whatever, and it'll do all the work for you, basically.
I see.
Can I give you some advice? Do not try to pour concrete down the rabbit hole, or a stick of dynamite, or anything from the Acme company, because that will come back and bite you on the ass real quick.
Yeah, actually managing to successfully track and bag an animal is a real feat in this game. Like, 2 out of every 3 times I load that game up, I won't even see anything, let alone get a hit and actually kill the animal. So when you actually do manage to get a kill, it's a big feeling of accomplishment. But besides the hunter, I've just got like a little rinky-dink laptop, so I've been playing Retro Game Challenge on the DS, and been doing some reading. I just wrapped up the Eisenhorn Omnibus, which is set in the Warhammer 40K universe. So that was awesome. Sweet. But not entirely game-related.
I'm not familiar with this game.
Yeah,
And then I got to check out, I've played, I think, 5 minutes of Prototype. But those were an incredible, very visceral, knife hands filled 5 minutes. And I look forward to many more minutes in the future.
Mr. Bauman, how about yourself?
I have been wrapped up fully, completely in Braid. And I've been sessioning it like every night, I'm almost done with it, I think. I don't really know if it goes further than it than it should. But it looks like I'm almost done with it as far as like, you know, how you can see the worlds. Have you guys played it at all?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I have.
Such good game. I like
it. It's fantastic.
Like, I was worried that the sort of hype of it being pretentious would have sort of killed it for me. Not at all. Uh-huh. I don't understand that criticism. It's a beautiful game, and it has really, really good puzzles.
Yeah. Really good puzzles. It's really a terrific game all the way through.
Yeah.
Do you ever fall into the trap of, like, you get stuck on a puzzle, you do it over and over and over and over again, you know what you need to do, but you just can't get the timing down, and then when you finally get it, you feel no sense of accomplishment, and you're just, oh, I'm so glad to get that out of the way.
Only on one. Like, there was one puzzle, and I figured out that I wasn't quite doing all the steps necessary to make it easier on myself. It's one where you drop the ring down to slow down time, and there's, like, you're going through this passageway where a cannon is shooting at you. And I thought I was doing it to the best of my abilities, and the timing was so close that I thought I was just missing it by like milliseconds, and I spent 2 hours trying to perfect the timing and get the jump out of the way so I could dodge this bullet coming at me, and I never could do it. But then I realized there was one more step I had to do to place the ring in a more advantageous position in order to slow it down even more. So once I figured that out, I was like, they weren't expecting me to get the timing impeccable, which was like really hard to do. So I don't know, I really haven't time where I was just like pushing buttons because I was frustrated, and that led me to the answer because something happened, like a chain reaction, and I was like, oh, like that's why. I wouldn't ever figure that out if I wasn't just messing around.
I don't know how many times I've you know, tried to perfect my timing for hours and hours before I realized I was doing it in the entirely wrong way, and there was a much simpler, you know, a solution. And I'm like, con, you know. What have you been up to?
I've been getting in my daily dose of Legends of Zork online every day. It's kind of how I'm getting going in the office in the morning, which is always fun. I'm finally back into WoW after like over a month off. So I'm on an Affliction Warlock, loving that. Summoning demons, haunting people. I mean, everything you can ask for.
Awesome.
And I'm super excited to, like, as I kind of mentioned earlier, to play Monkey Island. I don't have number 4, so I'm planning on scouring our gigantic wall of games here at the office before I leave today.
Quest.
Yeah. So I may be calling in the help of fellow intern Max to help me out with that. But if I can find that, then that's all I'll be doing this weekend, playing through Monkey Island.
Hey, I had to straighten up that entire wall of video games, so they should be in very organized and visible order.
Excellent. Hopefully it won't take me long then.
I have been playing Prototype and finally finished it, and oh wow!
finished it already?
Oh man!
Did you get in some like massive sessions?
Oh yeah! I mean, like day and night.
Awesome!
You can read all about it in my review in the September issue.
But it's so far away.
It is, isn't it? It's But instead of that, I'm going to ask a question, which is, I don't know how many of you saw the movie Primer. It came out years and
definitely
years ago.
Definitely. I love that movie.
That little independent movie made
absolutely
on like $15.
$6,000.
And I just,
I just don't understand what happens when you take a time machine and you put it in another time machine.
Is that what the movie's about?
Where do you go? What happens? Okay, so you go into a time machine, and let's say you want to send yourself a week into the past, right? But what if that time machine is in another time machine that sends you a week into the past?
Well, that's how they
do you go 1 week into the past? Do you go 2 weeks into the past?
Well, are you talking about the movie specifically?
No, I'm just asking, like, theoretically.
Oh,
like,
theoretically.
The universe explodes.
Yeah, do you go back, like, 7 times 7 weeks in the past?
I don't know.
Anyway, I'm gonna leave everybody on that vexing note. If you think you know what happens, hey, let us know at 877-404-1337, extension 724, and tell us last week. For the PC Gamer podcast crew, this is a rock legend, Logan Decker, saying thanks for listening, and we're looking forward to getting together again with all of you for a special E3 post-party next week. One of the first comments I saw was, did somebody actually kill Bill? That was terrible. They should do a public service announcements. Autoerotic asphyxiation. It's not worth it.
I had a kid in my philosophy class that insisted The Matrix was actually how it was, and we were all, you know,
awesome.
Asleep. Oh, it was great.
That's like the first thing you learn in philosophy 101. It's like, what if it's not real? Like, what's real?
Yeah.
Great, so you just keep punching him in the face going, I'm not hitting you.
Well, technically, you never touch anything, right? The electrons get close enough.
Yeah, that is crazy. And have you heard about quantum leaping? That still blows my mind.
Oh, yeah.
I hope that's what we're actually doing. Like, we don't actually move, we quantum leap constantly.
Yeah. Or quantum tunneling, when my keys tunnel to the other side of the house without me touching them, and that's why I can't find them. Yes.
Why do you have a subscription to American Cheerleader?
Why the fuck not?
I guess that's true.
Free country, dude. If you don't like it, go back to Russia.
Okay, you know what? I didn't... You know, why does everything have to be such a travesty with you? I didn't try to...
Go back to Russia.
I just want to talk about your cheerleader magazine.
Don't hate my freedoms. Oh, God, what I wouldn't do for a pork chop right now.
Kill a pig?
I would, with my bare hands right now, if that's what it took. I would tear its throat out.